Hi, this is Philip Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms.
And we are Daniel Trabucchi
and Thomas Buganza, the co-hosts of this podcast, where we present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest insights on platforms, starting from a paper, a project, or a book to make it accessible to everyone.
And with that, let's just jump right into the conversation. Welcome to another episode of the Talking About Platforms podcast. My name is Philip Meyer, and I'm here with my regular co-host, Daniel Trabucchi, and today's guest, Oliver Bossert. Hi, Daniel. Hi, Oliver. Great to have you.
Hi, Philip. Hi, Oliver.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Oliver is a partner with McKinsey and Company. He is based in Frankfurt, and he is a specialist in platforms, platform technology, and technical architectures of bigger and smaller firms. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Daniel for our regular first question.
Yeah, the question we'd like to start from is always the same. Everyone that comes to this podcast is actually talking about platforms. But over the years, the word platform actually lost its original meaning because it got so many meanings that to all of us can actually have different perspectives, different peculiarities. So our first question is, what is a platform to you? And even to get a bit more personal, how you end up in the world of platforms, so in a certain way, how you end up here with us today.
Thanks, a very good question, and honestly, maybe also the reason why a lot of those type of transformations fail because people didn't talk enough in the first place about what they are actually aiming for and how they think about a platform as a target or as an objective. So for me, a platform is actually something that supports another thing in the most abstract way. And usually in the tech space, people start with a very system-oriented picture of a platform. It could be a cloud platform. It could be a set of systems like your ERP systems that support your financial processes. From my point of view, I would like to extend that platform definition by not talking about systems only, but also talking about decision making and also talking about the people aspect of things. And if you have a harmonized support of those three different elements of the people, the processes, and the technology, then you can combine those things into a platform, and that can be very powerful in terms of accelerating innovation, lowering the cost of implementing things, and in particular, removing friction out of the system. So to also answer the second part of your question, how did I came into the world of platforms? Well, I mainly work with large-scale incumbents in my day-to-day life. So that's usually, you could think about it as a big bank or a large retailer or a large CPG company. And in a lot of those areas, we see quite some pressure, be it now in the retail space by Amazon, be it in banking, that the N26 direct banks and others are entering the market. And so a lot of my clients are asking themselves, what can I do in order to, on the one hand side, refactor my existing legacy tech space? How can I accelerate innovation? And how can I compete with those new digital attackers? And that actually led me to look into what are some of the consistent patterns that we see applied in digital players in tech companies. And that is what led us to focus on the platform aspect.
Oliver, you already mentioned that you're working with established firms, and in your 2019 McKinsey article, the platform Play, you line out a, I wouldn't call it the blueprint, but the framework that helps these firms to understand what you mean when you are talking about the platform, and also get an idea what it means to build a platform and run a platform, which is far more than just taking, I don't know, a marketplace idea, trying to bring on some sellers and some buyers on a marketplace, get some rough implementation of network effects, whatever that means, and then everything gets going. But it also depends a lot on the basis, right? A working IT infrastructure, working processes and systems. So maybe you can walk us a bit through your framework for the platform Play and how you enter into a conversation with a more traditional firm that reaches out to you and comes maybe in. Would be interesting to know how these conversations start. That come, do these platforms come in with the idea to build an open, multi-sided platform, and then you push the brake and say, let's look at the basics first, or how does this unfold, and how do you enter in these conversations?
So I would, first of all, again, also on the business side, I would not limit it to, so to say, platforms in the sense of platform ecosystems. But coming back to the original definition, it's a set of people, processes, and technology that serve a common purpose. So one of those could now be, for example, the checkout process at the retailer. Yeah, so that I have a platform that is completely dedicated to providing the customers the best possible checkout experience or information experience, or you name it. And here, I mean, if you compare some of the incumbents with some of the more innovative players, you see that those three aspects are very nicely aligned. You have basically someone who is a bit of a mini CEO of that process, who is really accountable and shows ownership for conversion rate in the checkout, to stick with that example. You have technology people aligned to him to help him with integrating things, and you have decision power within that process, which is in sharp contrast to some of the other more lagging players, where you have an org chart that's completely different from your tech landscape, that's completely different from your decision processes. Now, if you would stop there, you would end up with a lot of duplications. Yeah, because I mean, obviously, I don't know, if we stick to the retail example, everybody has to deal with inventory. If it's now for showing an information, or for checking out something, or for filling an order, or for supplying new goods into the warehouse. Now, therefore, we need that, besides those super exciting customer experience platforms, we need some more mundane type of business capability platforms that are reusable. Inventory would be a good example. Payment would be another good example, where we say, let us now, again, a set of people, processes, and technology that jointly provide inventory and that are accountable and able to make decisions on inventory. And that sounds so trivial, but this is a huge lever for a lot of companies, where at the moment, inventory might be decided by 15 people in 10 different departments. And it's completely unclear for someone who should actually now take a decision, what software, what version, what functionality to use for inventory management. And that is the second layer. And then, I mean, those teams now building inventory functionality, payment functionality, et cetera, they usually would also start to reinvent the wheel. Because if you look at one of those projects, then maybe the first 6 weeks, 8 weeks, they would discuss about, do we now run that on Azure, or do we run it on GCP, or do we run it on AWS? What is the Kubernetes version we should be using? What is actually the right way to store data? How should we integrate? What is the testing framework that we are using? And by the way, how are we anyhow going to write integrations? So that all, and again, decisions about how to write integrations, a process, how to do the testing, and the underlying cloud platform need to be bundled together in an IT for IT framework to really kind of bring those things together. And then you have those three layers. And if you really focus on reorganizing your processes, your org, and your technology in that direction, that can make a huge difference. Now, you're quickly on your second question, what are ways how people approach me or us? There is a variety of ways. I mean, there are organizations who really want to think that through more or less on a blank sheet of paper to design the future platform organization and architecture. There are sometimes organizations who only focus on the tech aspect because that's the easy one. Yeah. So they put a technology platform in place and they are wondering why they don't see the benefits of it. We also sometimes see companies that approach us more from having a big legacy type of environment where some of the hardware items literally can only be bought on eBay, and they are wondering how to now move from that environment into a future landscape.
Well, I'm perceiving, but correct me if I'm wrong, this platform approach as a specific kind of digital transformation. So proposing a platform mindset, a platform approach to actually revisit, redesign many business processes and brings digital technologies in. And I really appreciate this perspective that you have on platforms. It's very close to what we do with platform thinking, probably more at the business model level rather than at the process level. But we are very aligned on this. So taking incumbents that may be attacked by platforms that could actually benefit from a platform mindset, from revising some aspects of their operations through platforms. I was wondering if you have any specific case or even without a brand to help us understanding the actual shift that you've seen in one or in various companies applying this method. I think it would be super useful to actually understand what you are doing.
Yeah, so I mean, a typical starting point is literally, and let me stick to the case example that we just started to discuss in a retail world. The question would be literally, who is in charge of inventory management? And then if you're lucky, you get a list of 10, 15 names, but that already means that you have a very good understanding of the organization. Most of the time, you get three names, then you approach three people. They all tell you five reasons why that's not their decision to make and why you have to reach out to five other people. So that's basically the problem statement that, again, sounds trivial, but that can easily, if you now think about a larger scale project where you not only have to deal with inventory management, but also with, 20, 30 other capabilities, that can easily take a month or 2 months of time just to align with all the stakeholders and trying to get some of the decisions. So one of the big learnings I've seen throughout those transformations is that big part of the benefits already comes from the logical part of the transformation. So even if you do not start to consolidate the underlying technology, if you do not yet start to basically touch the physical world, just by saying, Daniel, you're now in charge of inventory management, the rest of the organization suddenly knows that if I need a decision, I call Daniel and I will get a decision on the point, not after you had your fix with your boss and he has his alignment meeting with five other people. And then after 3 weeks, I get an answer. No, I will get it today if I just drop you a message. So that's a big step forward for a lot of organizations. And then, I mean, even if I don't tell you, you should start to optimize your estate. If you look at it and you have two or three different version control systems in place, if you have two different test frameworks in place, if you have a total mess, and now you're accountable, you're in charge of that, then you definitely are going to, I mean, I don't need to tell you to clean up. Yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to start to consolidate things. You're starting to simplify things. And sometimes even not so much on the tech side of things, but even more so on the business side of things. Yeah, I don't know, maybe you just inherited two different inventory management systems. One is taking, one is taking inventory on an SKU level, and another one is taking inventory on a weight level. Now, I mean, without consolidating the technology, you might question that decision and you might want to start to harmonize the semantics of the underlying data model and start to harmonize the business processes in that area.
I think that's super, super interesting and a very, very good example. And I have in the back of my head that you said that tech is the easy one. That's a good quote. And I'm wondering, looking into the three dimensions, people, processes, and technology, when you look at a firm and start working at the firm, going in with first looking at the status quo. So where is this this company? How do you think about looking or assessing these three layers? And then would you start with where a strength of a company lies? So if the company already has some good processes, the right people in place and the right technology, and start building on that? Or is it going in with the biggest weakness and building a foundation across technology, processes, and people? So having the basis right, and then building on that. Is there an intersection between these three, or is it always we need to have this first and then we're building this on top?
No, I think the most important thing is that you start to iterate on all the three dimensions in parallel, and that could be also in a constrained scope. Yeah, that could be in a pilot area, that could be for one department, for one project, for one product, you name it. But I do think it's important that you start to improve on all the dimensions in parallel, because there is a kind of minimum law in place. You know, I mean, let's imagine we now optimize the hell out of our technology. So we have the perfect CI/CD pipeline in place, and we can deploy stuff within an hour into production. Wonderful. We also have all the org changed. We have a cross-functional integrated team. Everybody is working great together, but we didn't change the decision making. So the decision making is still a steering committee that meets every 4 weeks. Now, I did a ton of work to optimize my time to market, to cut out unnecessary interactions between people, to optimize my technology, but I've maybe optimized my cycle time from, I don't know, 6 weeks to 4 weeks, because there is, in one of the three dimensions, there is still a major blocker in place. And as long as I don't tackle that, I won't see the benefits, and people might get frustrated quite quickly. So that, at least from my point of view, is the most critical and most important one, to not try to get technology perfect and ignore the other two, but that you drive all the three things in parallel and push them at the same pace. Yeah, so I think that. And then, why is tech so easy? Because it's not political. Yeah. So I mean, at the end, tech is within the tech department, and they change a supplier, they change some underlying tech stuff that outside of tech nobody understands. Yeah. But now when we talk people, then we talk budgets, then we talk power play within the company. If we talk decision making, we suddenly want to empower a product owner person. And then if I'm currently that boss of that product owner person, I somehow feel I should have a say in whatever he decides or she decides. Yeah. So it's really kind of changing the culture of decision making. It also means it changes the power that people have. It changes the political positioning of individual stakeholders throughout the company. And that is what makes that thing incredibly difficult and requires a lot of top-down support in order to make it happen and let it become reality.
Well, you anticipated my next question. Meaning that next to platforms, one of my usual topics is agile project management and more broadly, agile culture. And I think it's very highlighted with what you are suggesting. So responsibility that moves down, that are actually shared among various people that don't need to know who is in charge to actually take a decision, to actually empower the process and to reach the best result in the best way possible. One of the usual challenges in this type of transformation are actually the people. So the culture, the changing of the culture. For sure, you were mentioning the political dimension. So removing the power or moving around the power in the organization in a certain way, but also at the same time, taking the responsibility of deciding, of picking a decision and things like this. I was wondering if you have any specific approach to deal with the cultural transformation beside the process and the technology. What kind of intervention you do in that direction? What are your suggestions, if not a specific method, to deal with it?
So, as I said, first of all, I think it needs to come, in most cases, top down. So you need a management team that really wants that transformation to happen, because, I mean, let's also be frank, not in all of those transformations, everybody will be willing to join the journey. Yeah. So, I mean, usually you will also leave some people behind that either need to be downgraded or that might leave the company or that just from their personal point of view don't want to be part of the journey. And you can't drive such a process bottom up. So it always needs a very strong backing from the management team. It's important that you have role modeling from the top to the bottom. Yes, I mean, you can't lead that as a management team and say, I want you guys to empower your people, and then you report back to me on a weekly steering committee on how good you are in empowering people. Yes, I mean, you really need to live that and role model that by also showing empowerment of the middle management in the first place. You need to use the incentives of people. Yeah, so I'm a big believer in, so to say, making people accountable, talking about OKRs, and then those OKRs should also influence the monetary incentives that people have. Yeah, I think it's trivial, but it also is a good mechanism to actually discuss and decide about what you want to focus on for the next year. And then last but not least, it also needs a story that people understand why that change is necessary. I mean, if you can't explain it, if you just do it because everybody is now doing Agile and therefore you think you should do it too, then most likely it's going to fail.
I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to be involved in a project with a major German automotive company and help them to build an internal marketplace for 3D printing capacity. So they had in all their different factories, the 3D printers, in different regions, different places, printers with different capacities. And it was very hard for the engineers to figure out what printer do I need? What technology do I need? How to reach the right colleague? How to get my file to that colleague? And then how to pay for the colleague, maybe in another brand, in another region, to do the work for me and send me the file back. So we had to connect all the printers, basically build the processes around it to do the refunding between the different parties or departments. And I think it was an advantage that 3D printing, although everyone agreed that this is a relevant technology for the future, it wasn't directly like bread and butter manufacturing core, right? It was more like for prototyping and like playing with the technology still. So that led to us having high degrees of freedom when it came to bringing in the technology, designing the processes, and working with people who really had this innovative and tinkering mindset. But then in the end, it stayed at a very, very small and let's say nucleus context, right? It didn't really spread across the organization and do a lot. So telling this long story, how do you find like the inventory management? How do you find a context where to start that is not so, let's say, narrow and maybe too future oriented, but very relevant for the core, but not maybe too core so that the company is fears a bit to, I don't know, touch the bread and butter processes and technologies.
Yeah, I mean it's a good question. I mean, the typical example how not to do it is that you want to prove the value of agile platform whatever development by creating a new room booking system or something like that, where everybody says, yeah, come on. I mean, we are a bank. It's nice that you now are able to book rooms. Yes, that was a big pain, but that doesn't tell me anything if that approach actually also works for my core banking system. Yeah, so I think it needs to be a relevant problem. And it needs to have a certain critical size because, I mean, at the end, you don't want that to be a technical proof of concept. You want it to be a platform proof of concept along all the three dimensions we just discussed. So, and that proof of concept, you can only kind of really push through if it also hurts a little bit on the decision side, and if it hurts on the people side of things. Yeah. So, 3D printing is a good example where maybe in that particular context it would have needed to be a notch more prominent, a bit more, creating a bit more friction, also to get the top management attention that you need. Yeah, because if you say, hey, we do a 3D printing marketplace, I mean, most likely that's not a topic where all of the board members are excited to join a presentation. If you say, hey, we are rethinking about how we do inventory management, yeah, people quickly calculate through how much of their personal bonus is going to depend on sales volumes or on in-time delivery or what have you. And they immediately think, yeah, inventory is actually something I should participate in the discussion. And you don't have that alarming effect if you start to, let's say, too distant from the core business.
So we had when we were doing this project, we had a team with very, very mixed backgrounds. So we had more people with business backgrounds, people with technical backgrounds, people coming from with data bringing in data expertise. Over the last years, I saw that also a company like McKinsey added a lot of expertise by acquiring companies or just building them themselves. How does your team look like when you work with companies at these type of problems? So what are the competences that you then also bring in? Do you work with partners or do you have like a team with different backgrounds and build on these new capacities that McKinsey and company has built during the last years? Or is this something where you say, no, you only set like the strategic frame and then you leave it to someone else? How did that maybe change during the last years?
So I would say our approaches are as diverse as the requests from our clients. So, I mean, sometimes we set the strategic target picture, develop the platform architecture, and the rest is done by the client or by some suppliers of the client. We sometimes also do build entire businesses. So where we literally, from the business process up to hiring people, up to developing the technology, build a digital attacker, build a new bank, build a new unit within a larger business. I think what's important is that usually our approach is, again, to not only focus on building the technology and then having a vendor lock in till eternity because we still own the people and we still own the process. No, I mean, if we really want to help our clients, then we need to help them to develop the process. We also help them to build capabilities and hire the right people. And we need them to build the necessary technology so that really they have a working platform model and not only so to say bits and pieces or one piece of the puzzle.
Talking about pieces, I was wondering, do you have cases or stories in which this project actually led to platform evolutions? So something that has built on top of this first piece of the project, leveraging this platform culture, is something you foster, is something you've seen happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what you usually see is already by having that logical structure in place, it gets it's a big acceleration in creating new projects. Yeah, because you literally sit down like with a box of Lego bricks and you think about, okay, those are now the 10 people I need to talk to. Those are the platforms that have already interface that I can consume in an easy way. Those are the ones where I still need to discuss with them about the roadmap, where my particular feature set could fit into their plans. And that is already something that you immediately notice throughout the entire organization. And it's also a big change in terms of transparency, because you suddenly can talk about something that people outside of IT understand. I mean, everybody understands inventory management. Everybody understands if you say we have built inventory management, but it's built in a way that others can't reuse it. And that's a big problem, and we need to solve that problem. That's a statement that basically from the CFO down to the reception desk guy, everybody can understand. If you only talk about tech terms, then you might have said the same thing. You might have said, yeah, still have some old remote procedure calls deeply embedded in our Java code that are very hard to consume from a REST service, where everybody would say, sorry, yeah, but that's your IT problem, or that's nothing that should concern me. So just finding with the platforms that are business oriented, finding a language and finding a way to provide transparency to stakeholders outside of IT is usually also a big advantage. And then, I mean, yes, the more you then move into a physical platform transformation, that you replace outdated mainframes by modern technologies, yeah, I mean, then it becomes a self-propelling, self-accelerated transformation, because you save cost on the mainframe side, you accelerate the time to market, you are quicker in introducing new innovations. But for me, the interesting thing, and that might also be counterintuitive to some people, is that a lot of the benefits start to happen already before you start to change code and hardware.
I think it's interesting because there are these dimensions of agile transformation, of digital transformation happening through the idea of platform, probably using one of the definitions of platforms that is not the most common and used over the last years. So not directly the platform ecosystem, but more the tech platform, and in a certain way, even the product platform. But talking about platform ecosystem, have you ever been involved in cases where this type of project then leads to an open platform that involves other players? You were talking about the external players out of the IT function. I was wondering if it ever happens that you leave the company boundaries in a certain way, involving other players.
And I think that is one of the key strengths if you start to think in platforms internally. So, I mean, for me, Amazon is a prime example. They are selling storage capacity in their warehouses. They are selling computer capacity. They are selling payment services. And they are building a platform ecosystem around all of those different services that are first meant to be only offered internally. Now, go to a random grocery retailer and ask them, hey, could we maybe after 2 or 3 months of prep time offer some of your warehouse capacity on the external market? I mean, no way. Yeah, I mean, it would most likely be a 2 to 3 year project, and then it only would work so-so. So I think having that thinking in mind is really the foundation to enable you to offer services to the external market, to incorporate partners. And if you always stick to that business capability is one encapsulated platform type of thinking, then I can also easily consume now, for example, building a marketplace. Now, if I have 15 different owners of 15 different inventory systems, there is no way either becoming a participant in a marketplace or offering other solutions. Yeah, because then I would most likely have as many invoicing systems, and I would need to connect those, and it would be integration hell. If I have one owner, one encapsulated inventory platform, then it actually becomes quite easy to offer marketplace solutions, to include inventory from partners, from other players, or to offer your inventory over other channels.
Opening up and leaving the boundaries of a single firm. One thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately is the role of centralized steering versus decentralized contextualization, so to say, right? And this is something you also recently wrote in another article, where you also bring basically the three different layers: the people, the process, and the technology, and go into even more detail and ask what are the functions within each and how much localization or decentralization versus centralization are necessary to achieve business and technical goals. So one example I always come up with is that, for example, if you open the Uber app, then if you open the Uber app in San Francisco, the signal that you get where you're picked up, the location, is much more accurate than when you do it, for example, here in Berlin. Because in San Francisco, the houses are organized basically in quarters, or the streets are organized in quarters, and the correction algorithms for the GPS signal that the Uber app uses is built in San Francisco, so it's optimized for San Francisco, which means it's not optimized or maybe even has negative effects if you use it, for example, in Berlin, where I'm located. While in general, of course, the technical layer is probably the one that you can centralize a lot better than, for example, processes and people. So when you think about, and in your piece, I can highly recommend reading it. I haven't seen a similar approach to really go into that level of detail and separating between where can I centralize and where can I decentralize and where do I need higher context and context understanding to get to the desired outcome. How do you like approach this and come to an understanding? What are the right dimensions and where is it more or less necessary for a fulfilling a user need or a business need to localize or centralize more?
Yeah, so I think we see that more and more. So we see it on the regulatory side, I mean, in particular in China, but also in other countries where we sometimes have data regulations that just doesn't allow you to use the same set of centralized platforms that you would love to use globally. And we also see it by user needs. So, I mean, it's really questionable if now someone in China can develop the perfect solution for the German Lastschrift Einzugsverfahren. And the other way around, it's very questionable if in the middle of Germany, you're able to develop the perfect solution for WeChat-based payment methods. So there is definitely a need for localization. There is a need for decentralization, but this can't be anarchy. And I think that's also something that a lot of companies get wrong, that yes, agile and anarchy, they both start with an A, but that's the only commonality. So if you look at really high performing agile organizations, they tend to be very disciplined on the few things that are really important. Yeah, so you won't find 20 different version control systems in those type of environments. You won't find a wide variety of tech solutions and every cloud provider being used a little bit. So you will find, so to say, clear centralized guidance. Now, how to harmonize things or decide about the harmonization, even without a geographic context, that can sometimes be an important decision. So, I mean, if I go back to the earlier retail example and to the inventory management. Now, let's assume we have a retailer that deploys stuff to, or let's say a consumer good company that deploys stuff to wholesale retailers like the Walmarts of this world and has a direct to consumer business. So I think it's now a very fair and legit discussion to have, do I want to have one or two inventory management platforms? So that means team, decision-making, and technology. Because, yeah, I mean, if I have that only once, it ensures that I always optimize for inventory. If I'm selling very expensive goods and very a lot of SKUs with very little item count, yeah, then maybe that's the right thing to do. On the other hand side, I mean, usually if I buy a good, then I don't know, if I buy some consumer electronics hardware, I buy one piece. if Walmart buys something, they buy a pallet. So now I start to mix up two very different business processes in one system, which is going to make it complex and slow and difficult to handle. And again, having business capability based platforms like inventory management is already the first important step to enable that discussion, because it's a completely different discussion if you can approach it from the business lens, like we just did, rather than if you approach it more from a vendor and from a technology lens. And if you confuse people with software names and with software versions and discuss about how to harmonize those. And then the key question there is really, is there a business need that is driving that already on the level of inventory management? Or can I maybe break it down one or two more levels that I say, maybe part of my inventory management, maybe because I split it between wholesale and retail customers, maybe the wholesale part is something that I would like to harmonize globally, because that's also an expectation that I have from some of my retail customers that are present in multiple countries, that they have one interface, while the direct-to-consumer inventory, maybe that's something that I localize to be better adjusted to the local needs. And I think the key recipe here is really always start with the business question first and then break it down, rather than starting with the technology solution in mind.
Well, I think this leads towards the usual conclusion of our chat. This was a very interesting chat that was bringing us into a methodology in a certain way, a different way of dealing with the idea of platform. And surely a focus that, Philip, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was the first time we were directly talking of platforms as a support for internal processes and to provide the way in which things are done within the company. And I think this was super, super interesting. What we do to close the episodes of our podcast is looking ahead. So trying to understand what are possible evolutions, future directions you're working on. And here the question is, what would you like to share with us and with our listeners in this direction?
I think the platform approach has just started, and we see a proliferation of new services on all levels. So I mean, a lot of the things that used to be differentiating business capabilities now move into the tech stack. Yeah, I mean, even if we think about things like what is super sophisticated nowadays, Gen AI and large language models, I assume in a couple of months, at the latest years, all of those things will become a standard service of the cloud provider of your choice. Yeah? And at the same pace, we are also seeing business functionality migrating into SaaS platforms that you no longer need to develop the next product to buy algorithm yourself. There is a SaaS service that you can plug in. So we are going to see, at least from my point of view, two very different kind of developments. On the one hand side, we are going to see more and more commoditization of those services. And on the other hand side, we also see differentiation by going really, really deep into some of those areas. Example would be like, if you, and again, now sticking to the retail world also for the final example, but if you look at the churn rate, so at the bounce rate of customers on your website, it is directly correlated to your latency. So, and latency, again, usually is caused by a lot of stuff very, very deep down into your tech stack. So suddenly you have a real potential to do some tuning down in the dark data center to really optimize the last smidge of your latency and thereby influence the top line revenue. And I think we will see more and more of those opportunities where, despite the entire trend towards commoditization, you have still opportunities to go really deep in tech and thereby create a competitive advantage for your company.
Well, I can only echo what Daniel mentioned, that I very much like your approach and your thinking as well, really starting with a relevant business problem. And then I also like the dimensions of the people, the processes, and the technology, and then also building the three in an iterative approach and growing from there and only opening this up to what we call platform ecosystems, where it makes sense, when it makes sense, compared to what I often see incumbent firms setting up a new company and then trying to build some platform business, new platform business model as an external entity, as a like corporate startup or something like that, and without really like understanding how to build the capacity to run the necessary technical infrastructure, the processes, and the people internally, and then growing it. And before we leave, is there a way for our listeners to get in touch, to interact, and to follow your work beyond following what you publish through McKinsey? So are you anywhere on the wide internet active and sharing your work?
So the easiest way to reach me is actually over LinkedIn. So I'm not so active on any of the other social networks, but LinkedIn usually is a very good place to reach out.
Wonderful. We will link all the articles that we mentioned. We will link your LinkedIn account. And thank you so much for joining us at Talking About Platforms and for the great conversation we had today.
Thanks a lot. I think it was a very fun conversation. Thanks a lot for having me. And I think you have a very important contribution here to increase and improve the understanding of people, because in a lot of cases, that's really what's holding back a transformation, that people are insecure, uneducated, that it's a too complex manner for them and they haven't fully understood it. So thanks a lot, and thanks a lot for the conversation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms.
You can rate the podcast on every major podcast app. This helps us a lot in growing.
Visit talkingaboutplatforms.com to get the links of the short notes, reach out to us, and see the previous episodes.
Hear you in another episode to talk about platforms.